This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It is time for...
It's Impossible.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Full of hijinks.
And look, I'm not your friend, so I'm not your friend, I'm your enemy.
And educational.
You sound like you're a moron.
It's What I Learned on TikTok, starring Gordon Damer.
Oh, yes, it is that time. How often do you really get to learn anything on sports talk radio? This is the one time you could do it. And it's through What I Learned this week on TikTok. In case you're new to the game, new to the show, it's very simple. I, as a 53-year-old man, spend way too much time on that TikTok app, but I learn information that when I first read it, I think, there's no way that can be true. But, oh no, it is true, and it is what I learned this week on TikTok. So I formulated a little segment, give the guys working on the show a little airtime today, Joe and Julian. I give them four pieces of information, one of which is something that is true and something that I learned this week on TikTok. All right, so are we ready to roll for today? Joe, Julian, who is batting leadoff?
That'd be me.
All right, Joe, batting leadoff today. All right, I like it. I like it. Okay, here we go. Number one, Joe. The dude in the song Dude Looks Like a Lady by Aerosmith was Bret Michaels from Poison. Number two, The Rock, the wrestler The Rock, was the first person to tweet about the death of Osama bin Laden. Number three, in the Muppet movie, Jim Henson had to spend almost a month in a steel drum to film the scene of Kermit the Frog playing his banjo in a swamp. Or number four, the first Macy's Day Parade, Thanksgiving Day Parade, was only five blocks long, but featured live animals like bears and lions, essentially walking on leashes in the streets. So there you go. Those are your four. Again, number one, Dude and Dude Looks Like a Lady by Aerosmith was Bret Michaels of Poison. Number two, The Rock, the first person to tweet about the death of Osama bin Laden. Number three, in the Muppet movie, Jim Henson had to spend almost a month in a steel drum to film that scene of Kermit playing his banjo. Or number four, in the first Macy's Day Thanksgiving Day Parade, it was only five blocks, but it did have bears and lions basically walking in the streets.
And here we thought Richard's call was wide-ranging.
Right, yeah. No, there's no Woody Allen references, but still, pretty wide-ranging.
I'm going to go just because it sounds the most ridiculous with the Macy's Day Parade.
All right, lock it in.
Lock that one in.
There we go. No, that is incorrect. The first Macy's Day Parade, they did. It was 6 miles, and it did have bears and lions, but they were in cages. They weren't ridiculous. They were not going to threaten the people with bears and lions, basically getting away on a leash. No, that is incorrect. So to recap, the three that are still alive: Dude Looks Like a Lady was Bret Michaels from Poison. Number two, The Rock, the first person to tweet about the death of Osama bin Laden. Or Jim Henson, the Muppet movie, had to spend a month in a steel drum to film the Kermit playing the banjo scene. Have you seen the Muppet movie?
Yes, I have.
Oh, you have.
The one that I'm going to go with.
Okay, you're going to lock that one
lock
in.
I didn't mean to
force your hand there, but that is also incorrect. No, he spent a full day, like in a steel drum, like a sealed drum with his hand sticking out. Still uncomfortable, but it was not a month. So now you're down to two. The dude in the song Dude Looks Like a Lady was Bret Michaels from Poison. Or number two, The Rock, the first person to tweet about the death of Osama bin Laden.
Give me Bret Michaels.
Bret Michaels, lock it in.
Lock it in.
Are you sitting in Harvey's chair today? Is that the problem?
No, but it seems like I am.
Yeah, it does seem that way. No, that is incorrect. Yeah, no, there was somebody, who else? It was not Bret Michaels from Poison. It was Vince Neil. Vince Neil from Motley Crue was actually the inspiration for Dude Looks Like a Lady. All the guys in Aerosmith had seen it. Oh, wow, look. And it was turned around and it was Vince Neil. No, The Rock was the first person to tweet about, he didn't say the death of Osama bin Laden, but it was clear what he was referencing. I don't know how he got the information. He's been asked about it. He said, if I told you, I'd have to kill you. But no, he is on record as being the first person to tweet about the death of Osama bin Laden. All right, so 0 for 3 day for Joe at the plate. Julian has quickly become my personal nemesis in this game.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's all right. All right, here we go, Julian. Are you ready to roll here?
Yep, let's go.
All right, here we go. Number one, Oprah Winfrey's legal name is Orpah, but people kept mispronouncing it, and she got sick and tired of correcting them, so she just switched to Oprah. Number two, the band Radiohead has refused to put out a 10th album because their frontman, Tom York, believes in the curse of the ninth, which is that a composer will die before finishing their 10th symphony like Beethoven and Schubert. Number three, the comedian Fred Armisen from Saturday Night Live fame used to sell weed to the Menendez brothers. Or number four, before he was president, Gerald Ford asked Jet Li, the actor and martial artist, to be his personal bodyguard.
These are all tough.
Okay. All right. That's good. I like that.
Yeah. Do you mind just running through
them? Yeah, running through them again. Sure. Oprah Winfrey's legal name is Orpah, but people kept mispronouncing it. Number two, the band Radiohead has refused to put out a 10th album because their frontman, Tom York, believes in the curse of the ninth, which is that a composer will die before finishing their 10th symphony. Number three, comedian Fred Armisen from Saturday Night Live fame, as well as other things, used to sell weed to the Menendez brothers. Are you aware of who the Menendez brothers are?
I am.
Okay, good. All right. Sometimes the age difference sometimes.
Guys.
And then number four, before he was president, Gerald Ford asked Jet Li to be his personal bodyguard.
Yeah, I have no clue on any of these.
Okay, all right.
So I'm going to go for a strategy of just shot in the dark.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Radiohead.
Radiohead. All right. Tom York's Radiohead. Tom York has refused to put out his 10th album because his frontman, he believes in the curse of the ninth. No, that's incorrect. Very wordy.
You're wrong.
Yeah, it was very wordy. I was thinking about scratching it, but I had nothing else that was better than that. But there you go. No, that's incorrect.
Yeah.
So we can now forget it. We can now scratch it. So we're down to three. Oprah Winfrey's legal name is Orpah. Fred Armisen used to sell weed to the Menendez brothers, or Gerald Ford asked Jet Li to be his personal bodyguard.
Yeah. Another shot in the dark, Fred Armisen and the Menendez brothers.
Okay, yeah, lock it in. Also incorrect. No, I just made that up out of the clear blue sky. I don't even know. The Menendez brothers had plenty of problems. I don't even know if they smoked weed. Maybe they should have. If they didn't, they probably should have. Might have melded them out a little bit. All right, so now you're down to two there, Julian. Oprah's legal name is Orpah, or Gerald Ford asked Jet Li to be his personal bodyguard?
I'll go with Oprah for this one.
Oprah, all right, they're going to lock it in.
Yeah, lock it in.
That is correct. Oprah Winfrey's legal name is Orpah, but she just got tired of people mispronouncing it, and she said, whatever, I'll just go with Oprah. Weird. I feel like I would have known that by now, but no, that is actually true. So good job. Knocked that one out of the park. Did better than Joe, at least. All right, so now we're down to our final one.
Thanks.
Yes, now we're down to our final one. This time we switch it. Now you're trying to spot the lie. There are three truths, one lie. And Joe and Julian get to team up on this one. See if they can do any better. Okay, number one, Abraham Lincoln had a dog named Fido who was also assassinated. Number two, Johnny Cash is believed to be the first person in the United States to know that Joseph Stalin was dead. Number three, Bill Nye, the science guy, quit his job at Boeing to become a stand-up comedian after winning a Steve Martin look-alike contest. Or number four, before he was the brain, Bobby Heenan was a bodyguard for business mogul Conrad Hilton. Okay, so to recap again, Joe, Julian, right now they're teaming up like they do when you're trying to steal on Family Feud. Number one, Abraham Lincoln had a dog named Fido who was also assassinated. Number two, Johnny Cash believed to be the first person in the U.S. to know that Joseph Stalin was dead. Number three, Bill Nye, the science guy, quit his job at Boeing to become a stand-up comedian after winning a Steve Martin look-alike contest. Or number four, Bobby Heenan, before he was the brain, was a bodyguard for business mogul Conrad Hilton.
I'm going with Lincoln and his dog. There's no way that that's...
There's no way that's true.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that as a reaction. Okay. Julian?
I was also leaning towards that.
Okay.
Let's do the 50-50. I'll change mine to the fourth one.
The fourth one, Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
All right, lock it in. I will tell you one of you's right, one of you's wrong. Julian, yes, you are correct. Bobby Heenan was never a bodyguard for business mogul Conrad Hilton. No, Abraham Lincoln had a dog named Fido who, the reports are a little sketchy. It seemed like it was kind of Fido was a little, not really trained all that well. And yes, he was killed intentionally by someone. Johnny Cash, yes, he is believed to be, can't verify it, of course, but believed to be the first person in the U.S. to know that Joseph Stalin was dead. And yes, Bill Nye, the science guy, absolutely quit his job at Boeing after winning a Steve Martin lookalike contest back in 1978. So there you go, people. That is what I learned this week on TikTok. And now, because of this segment, whether you wanted to or not, you have learned it too.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
At 6:30, we'll get a little preview of UFC 300, which is tonight. We're going to talk with Kyle Anthony from the MMA Happy Hour podcast. Get some, I would say some analysis, but mostly some betting advice. I'm not going to tell you I'm the biggest diehard MMA guy in the world, but my son is certainly into it, so I'm trying new things. I'm trying to get some knowledge, so if I can make some money along the way. The kid costs me money every step of the way, so I'm looking to just trying to balance it out, so we'll talk with Kyle coming up at 6:30. But we've not touched really on anything NFL-related, and except for the fact that the Jets and the Sabres now have, they tie for the longest playoff drought in North American sports. I know, Joe, that did not make you happy. How about this? How about this? The draft is 12 days away. Which, if you extend it out, it's really 14 days from the end of the draft, right? So basically, in 2 weeks, you will finally be free of Zach Wilson.
Are we sure?
I'm putting it out. I'm putting a Damer guarantee on. By the time the NFL draft is over, the Jets will not have Zach Wilson on their roster.
I hope you're right. I really do, because you know how I feel about this.
Yes,
and I think I speak for not all Jet fans, but
most
99% of them.
Yes.
That will be throwing a parade down the Canyon of Heroes once they get that official notification.
Yeah. Look, I think it's going to happen. I mean, not as I said before, and I don't break this out often. This is not something that I go to the well with a lot, but it's the phrase, not even the Jets. Not the last time I used the phrase, not even the Jets, it's going to sound bizarre now, but in the second year of Adam Gase, there was starting to be this narrative. Well, you know, the Jets might not get rid of Adam Gase. There's a possibility Gase stays on beyond this year. Joe Douglas is his buddy. He might survive to a third year. And I said back then, not even the Jets would keep Adam Gase beyond that second year. And soon enough, sure enough, he was gone. So for the Jets, I'm breaking it out again. Not even the Jets could keep Zach Wilson on this ride. I know what Woody said. I know what that's all well and good. But for Zach Wilson, for the Jets themselves, if they can trade him, trade him. If they can cut him, if that's what it's they're reduced to, that's what they should do. If they could force him into the transfer portal. I like to think of the transfer. It sounds like the thing that they used on Star Trek to beam themselves from planet to planet. That's the way I like to envision what the transfer. I don't actually know what the transfer portal is. But I like to envision it almost like a box in a way, almost like an elevator, like Doctor Who, where you step into the box and then you get zapped from place to place. If they could trick Zach Wilson into stepping into the transfer portal, and look, you talk about a win-win. He goes back to college. The Jets get – now, they're not going to get anything for him. I don't think you can get a fourth-round pick from a college team. But still, whatever you have to do, they should do. They should absolutely do. But there was a couple other things that came up this week that I wanted to hit on. The biggest one was the Bills trading of Stephon Diggs. So when you take a look at what the Bills have right now in their wide receiver room, it's basically like Curtis Samuel, the guy Shakir, Mac Hollins. And there's been quickly a narrative building that the Jets have the most talent in the AFC East, that they should be the favorites to win the AFC East, that they're now contenders in the AFC. They have the most talent. guys, do you ever listen to yourself? Do you ever step back for a second and say, what am I doing to myself? The draft has not happened as of yet. Do you think that the Bills are unaware that the Bills don't have Stephon Diggs anymore? Do you think that they're not aware that Stephon Diggs does not play for... Do you think that they're going to get to week one, the season opening game, and, oh, wait a second, we don't have Stephon Diggs anymore. We could really use a wide receiver. They're going to get a wide receiver in the draft. And it would kind of trouble me some if you're in the Jet camp of, hey, with the 10th pick, we should take a skill position player. It would worry me a little bit because now Buffalo's in the mix as a team probably willing to move up ahead of you to get one of the big-time receivers at picks maybe 7, 8, or 9. And if they come out of the draft and don't get a big-time wide receiver in the first round, it would be very, very surprising. So let's not get too carried away. We all realize that the draft is an exciting time. It's a lying season. There's a lot of things going on. But let's not get too carried away expecting that now the Bills are now going to fall apart because they willingly traded Stephon Diggs away. I think there's probably more to that story than we know. And I'm not saying that the Bills are the premier organization. Certainly they've fallen short here. After a couple of years ago, you thought they were on the verge of something. They've not been on the verge of anything. It's been one disappointment after another. But I don't think that they're going to go into the season with such a gaping hole at wide receiver as they have right now. Now, on the Giants side of things, you really have to give Joe Shane credit on one major thing. Now, I don't know, in terms of the draft, what's going to happen. Nobody has an idea of what the Giants are going to do with the pick that they have at 6. There's been, and if he's as good, if his pick at 6 is as good as he has done a job, Joe Shane, of confusing people of what he's going to do at 6, well, then this is going to be a Hall of Fame pick. Because every day you read things about the Giants or you look at things about the Giants, and it's a different story. One day if they're going to trade up for a quarterback, one day they're going to trade down, one day they're going to take a quarterback. Which quarterback? One day it's J.J. McCarthy, another day it's Drake May. This week, all of a sudden there was the new possibility they're going to wait and draft a quarterback in the second round or trade back into the end of the first round. Every single day. They have the 6th pick, and there's been about 600 different scenarios that have been floated. We're eventually going to nail it. One of these scenarios eventually is going to be right. And to me, it seems like with 2 weeks to go, to me, the best case scenario for the Giant, if you're a Giant fan and you're looking at the long term, is that by the time the Giants pick at 6, if they remain at 6, the quarterbacks are likely going to be off the board. Because to me, bringing in a quarterback to this situation with this lack of talent on offense at the skill positions is really a recipe for failure for whatever quarterback that would be. So to me, the best case scenario for the Giants is to get a real skill position player at 6 at the wide receiver position who will be the true dominant number one receiver at that spot for a very long time. And then if you have to draft a quarterback next year, if you see a guy late in the first round who's lingered there and you can get that, okay, that's one thing. But this draft for the Giants has to be about offense, offense, offense. And it's too much. There's too many holes to fill simply through one draft. And to think that a quarterback could come into this group and kind of fix all the problems that you have from a skill position spot, I think it's a little bit much to ask. And it's kind of like deja vu all over again, taking a quarterback, overdrafting someone at 6, and thinking that that's going to fix all the issues that you have on offense. You're stuck with Daniel Jones for another year. This is at least a 2-year rebuild from an offensive perspective. Excuse me. And you have to approach it that way. I know that the NFL, not for long, and there's the possibility if things don't go right this year, people that are in those jobs right now might not be in those jobs for long, but putting a timeline on something that is going to need more than simply 1 year to fix it in a significant way, I think would be a major mistake and a recipe for failure.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Then our next guest, Kyle Anthony, is on the MMA Happy Hour podcast. You see him on MSG, a whole bunch of places. Kyle, thanks for coming on with us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to talk about a massive card that's going down tonight.
Yeah, well, three title fights, 12 current or former champs on the card. All the talk about UFC 300 has been about the expectations, about the excitement. Do you think this card will live up to those expectations?
I actually absolutely do. I think this is the biggest night of combat sports. You've got so many past champions, so many people that have just illustrious careers, great resumes. I mean, even opening the card, you've got two guys who were former champions, and that's at 6 o'clock where this fight, this card's going to go on until past midnight. So there is just stacked card here, and really excited for it tonight.
All right, so let's go to the big ones, the two co-main events. We'll go with Pereira and Hill for the light heavyweight title. Hill's coming off that Achilles injury. It was only 9 months ago. Now, what version of Hill do you think we're going to get in this fight tonight?
Yeah, that's really like one of the big questions when you're looking at this fight. I mean, the Achilles injury and coming back so quickly, you know, and that's something that I do believe is going to indicate in this fight kind of how I look at it and just looking at it from just a betting perspective or who I believe is going to win the fight. And coming in on injury, coming in and really fighting your toughest opponent, those kinds of things, I think it's going to really affect a lot of things. It could affect his movement. It could affect him taking those leg kicks, which Alex Pereira really fires away at leg kicks. And I think that that's where he's going to be looking at and looking to really chop away. So I do believe this is kind of a situation where it's going to matter a lot. And also, what's his process of healing, recovering? Has, you know, Hill been training fully? You know, there's a lot of questions that go into it. While Pereira has focused on UFC 300 to be an event he was going to be on. He knew he was going to be on this card, just didn't know where. While Hill, short-ish notice, found out just a little bit before the event was even, the main event was even said. So I do believe that this could be a little bit short, time recovery for Hill coming in on a big spot for him.
All right, so for the I'm the casual MMA guy. I'm the casual UFC guy. I am not as in. That's why I wanted to have Kyle on to kind of talk about some of the ins and outs of this, especially from the betting perspective, because it's always better when you can make a little money on these things. What would you say the odds are this fight ends in a knockout?
I think it's very high. I really do. I think that this is a spot where I like Pereira as a side that I'm going to be taking is Pereira. I think that this is a great spot for him. I think that the way in which he fights, I think that if either one was going to, if Pereira was going to lose, it's by knockout. I don't see this fight going very far. I do think it could end within the first 2 to 3 rounds. Just the way these guys fight, just the power that they do bring, I do think that this is a high probability for a knockout. But I do like Pereira. I think the power is going to be there. I think that the competition level, if you even just kind of look at the competition level, both of these guys, you know, Pereira's last 5 fights were all past champions. All of them were past champions. And while Hill on the other side is beating guys who, you know, slightly a little iffy, you know, Jimmy Crute, who's 0-3-1 out of his last 4, Johnny Walker, maybe on the Mount Rushmore of glass chins. The other one was Thiago Santos, who's on a 1-7 run, and he's not even no longer with the UFC anymore. And then he beat most recently a Glover Teixeira, who was 43. So I really think just so much goes into this for Pereira, and I do like Pereira to get that knockout victory.
All right, Pereira -134, the latest odds that I checked out here before the interview.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the other co-main event is the women's strawweight title, Yan Xionan against Zhang Weili. Xionan is coming off like a real breakthrough performance last time out. Do you think mm-hmm. that she's going to be able to follow that up here against the champ?
You know, I actually kind of agree with these odds. I mean, you know, Weili is around a -450 or somewhere in there. And
yeah.
I actually do kind of believe that's where it's going to kind of go. You know, I do think that you know, Yan has shown some good spots, has shown some opportunity to really kind of elevate her skill set. But, you know, coming off the Andrade knockout, I think is nice. But the one, you know, really concerning side for her was her loss against Carla Esparza. You know, Carla Esparza is wrestle-heavy, was able to really just get her down, do what she wanted to do, and that's really something that I think that Weili's going to do. She's going to look for takedowns. She's going to look for that control time. She's going to look to really brutally get her down and really finish her there. So this is a spot where if you're looking on the betting side of things, you know, getting off the big -450 number, you know, you can get Weili. She's around, like, even money. inside the distance. This is a 5-round fight. I think she gets her down, and I do think that she's going to be able to control her, get that finish. So I think this could be a one-way traffic co-main event that we're going to see there.
All right, so moving on to some other cards, or some other fights on this card. We're talking with Kyle Anthony from the MMA Happy Hour podcast. The BMF title is back up for grabs. Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway. This seems like the one where you talk to people. This is the one that's must-see TV. These guys are like made out of titanium. What do you expect of this one when it goes down?
Yeah, I mean, this one is an absolutely fantastic fight. You got Gaethje, who is the current BMF champion. And the big thing about this fight, when you kind of look at it and me going back, breaking it down, was this is the second time Max has moved up from 145 pounds to 155 pounds. And that last time he did that was in 2019. And he was really the smaller guy, you know, and that was a big thing for him. Max has all the ability in the world, but just the size difference was a lot for him. And that's really what caused him losing that fight against Dustin Poirier. Now he's fighting Justin Gaethje, who is a big 155 pounder who probably hits harder than Dustin Poirier and really can bring it, while Max really had to build up overall his entire body. You know, he's got to really add muscle. He's got to really add certain things to really kind of fill his frame overall. And some of those things that make Max so great, it could actually hurt him in this spot where maybe he's going to be not have the cardio he's used to having. Maybe his hand speed won't be there. But I do think that you're going to see Justin Gaethje moving forward. The line has actually come in. Money has come in on Max Holloway here throughout this week. Justin Gaethje was over a minus 250. Now he's roughly around the minus 150 mark. So money has come in on Max. But at the weigh-ins, I still think Max looks small. I don't think that he's going to have the frame for it. I do like this knockout here. I think Gaethje, money line is a good spot. I also like Gaethje via knockout, which is some nice plus money around, you know, plus 155, plus 160.
Yeah, you mentioned the line movement for Holloway. He's about like plus 130. He was up at like plus 185. Why do you think that has happened here so late?
I think that one of the things that people look at this fight is that Gaethje is the older guy. You know, he's a couple years older. He's at 35. And sometimes, you know, father time catches up with all of us. But Max Holloway is no spring chicken either. But I think they think that the past of just really pushing that pace for Max Holloway, pushing forward. He's going to have the volume. He may have a little bit better at the striking. And Gaethje could get him early. I think you're going to see a lot of damage early. But if Gaethje doesn't put him away, Max has a shot later this fight goes. It's going to be a 5-rounder. And Max has durability. He's got cardio. He's got pace. So if there is anything or if there is a path for Max, I think that's kind of where it goes, where it's going to be more of Max just kind of out-volleying him over the 5-round and finding an opportunity to get a decision.
We're talking with Kyle Anthony from the MMA Happy Hour podcast. All right, so I focused on the main events, the big ones that everybody's looking forward to, but there's a lot of fights on this card. What other fights are flying under the radar that you're keeping an eye on from, especially a betting perspective, Kyle?
Yeah, one of the ones that is one that I think that a lot of people are talking about, and it's one just before the pay-per-view starts, and that's Alexander Rakic versus Jiří Procházka. This is going to be an explosive fight, a great, fantastic fight overall. Both of them high-level strikers have the ability to go in there and cause damage. But Jiří is just a guy that is extremely unorthodox. He is extremely awkward style, and it's very hard to prepare for. It's very hard to prepare for a guy that moves like he does, has the footwork that he has, you know, throws combinations at the awkward angles that he does throw them. So those are the things that can make it difficult. But I think the clear vulnerability here for Rakic, and this is at a basically a pick-em price right now, is the fact that he's not very good with pressure, and that is all Jiří is going to bring. He thrives in chaos. He likes to move forward, mixing in that awkward style where you've got Rakic, who's a guy that, again, he wants to be in space. He wants to be the technical striker. He wants to utilize some of those tools at range. And I think it's a tough mix for him overall. And really, lastly, with Rakic is the fact he's coming off an injury. He blew out his knee 2 years ago against Jan Blachowicz. And this is, you know, his first fight back. And not only is just his first fight back off a major surgery, major injury, it's the toughest fighter he's ever faced. So I do think this is a spot for Jiří. Again, the line has tightened a little bit on this one here, where, you know, Jiří was a little bit of an underdog. Now it's kind of, it almost looks to almost switch at this point, but it's at Pick'em. I agree with the line movement. I think Jiří has an opportunity to get this finished and get the job done.
All right, so I'm talking about how great this card is, but a lot of people, especially around here, already kind of looking ahead to June, UFC 301 at the Prudential Center. That one does not have a main event as of yet. Anything you think happens tonight that impacts that main event, or what do you think happens at 301?
You know, I'm kind of leaning towards that it could be Merab Dvalishvili versus Sugar Shane O'Malley. I think it's a spot that it could fit nicely for him. It sounds like these two guys have verbally agreed. There's a lot of banter going on online between these two, and they both want the fight now. Wasn't really sure if that's how it was going to go, you know, maybe a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago, but now it's looking like this is going to be the fight to make, and that's going to be a great fight. I will absolutely be there if that's going to be the situation, but I do think that they actually may even announce something like that tonight. Also, who knows kind of tricks that Dana White's going to have in his bag here, but I do think it could be the Merab versus O'Malley fight that goes down there in the main event.
Kyle, thanks for a couple of minutes. Enjoy the card tonight, and hopefully good luck with the bets as well.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It happens year in and year out, and it's already happened this year. Safe to say that all the panic that I heard on all the various shows of the first week of the baseball season over the Mets starting 0-5 has subsided, right? They've won some games. They've looked better. Their offense has started to come together some. And all of a sudden now, the season is not over. Even when you lose your first five games, the season is not over. And the Mets, here's the thing. The Mets have too much talent to be awful. Awful means you have no talent. The Mets have a lot of talent, and most of it is on the offense side of things, right? They have too many good offensive players to go an entire season with basically 60 wins, which was the way people were making it. Oh, this is going to be rock bottom. This is going to be terrible. Why did anybody think this team was going to be any good? They have too much talent to be awful. Now, I don't think they have enough talent to be really, really good. And when they get to the trade deadline, we'll see where they stand with the expanded playoffs and everything else. It's going to be hard for the Mets, though, as an organization, to completely play their way out of it. And we'll see how things transpire over the course of the year. I think the Pete Alonso question is going to be one that's going to have to be answered. But, yeah, the Mets have too much talent to completely fall off the map. When you have a Lindor, an Alonso, a Nimmo, Alvarez taking another step forward. And already I think you've gotten to see some good things out of Brett Beatty. So they're not going to be a team like the way they played those first five games that's not going to score. So they're not tanking. They're not going to be terrible. We'll see how things kind of transpire over the course of the season, whether or not they can kind of stay in it long enough, and what the approach is at the trade deadline. Are they going to be a team that adds to things? Are they going to be a team that tears things down a little bit at the trade deadline? Last year, they were only awful because as an organization, the owner essentially gave up. I know that nobody's going to criticize the great Steve Cohen, but that's essentially, and I think that filtered down to the team that they felt like the organization felt like, hey, we're out of it. All right, let's cash in the chips and wait for the offseason and everything else. So I think that's why they finished as poorly as they did last year. I think the Mets are probably going to be around a 500 team this year. And if they can maybe exceed that a little bit, maybe they will add to this team before the trade deadline this year. Otherwise, it might be another year without the playoffs, and then you go into the offseason and you expect major things then. As for the Yankees, I think you have seen some changes already. I think you've seen some changes already on how they are approaching things this year, where they are not putting out those lineups that are just a complete give-up-the-ghost kind of lineup. And even today, in a doubleheader, the second game of the doubleheader, they actually have a representative lineup. Volpe's in there, Soto's in there, Judge is in there, Rizzo's in there, Stanton's in there, Torres is in there. It's basically I think the only switch they made was the catcher. Which, okay, that's fine. Wells plays the second game. Trevino played the first game. And away you go. And there were so many times last year, especially when the injuries came, where the lineup was not a representative lineup. But even before then, in an effort to keep everybody fresh and everybody healthy, they'd have these games at the end of a series when they'd already won a couple of games where it would be like a give-up lineup. And it doesn't seem like they're doing that this year. So kudos to the Yankees, and at least so far, a great start to the year, trying to pull off the sweep of the Guardians today, already up 2-0 as they play in the bottom of the third. All right. It is that time, people. It is time for...
A hungry gamer is never full.
At this stage of my life, eating is like 90% of my joy.
Where he answers the unanswerable.
Got to do something with my hands. I got to get busy.
No algorithm can defeat the GD.
Just take it right in the face. Right in the face. Don't worry about it.
These are Gordon Damer's leftovers.
Yes, the leftovers. Time for Joe and Julian to throw. We learn a lot in the course of a show, but sometimes there's things left on the cutting room floor, so this is our chance to get those things out before the top of the hour. Joe, what you got, my friend?
I was going to continue with this, with Boone and his managerial job to start the year, because not only is it the lineups that every single day it seems like you could just write it down in pen and it's good for 5 out of the 7 days of the week, his bullpen usage... We know who the A guys are and who the B guys are, and there's no real fighting for the jobs anymore, and we're going to put this guy in because we like the matchups. No, the seventh innings, Ferguson's inning, eighth inning, well, we don't have Loaiza anymore, but that's really the only open spot to get to Holmes. So I really appreciate the job that Aaron Boone has done. He's went to school on himself, it seems.
Well,
like,
I don't know that it's Boone. I feel like it's an organizational thing, but yes, the change in direction from a Yankee organization, if it is Boone, if it is Cashman, if it is the analytics team, whoever it is, there is a noticeable switch in the way the Yankees are going about their business. And especially in the first month of the season, you would figure if there was ever a time where they were going to kind of throw out, give up lineups or give guys chances in big spots to only see them fail, this would be the time of the year to do so. So, yeah, no, it is a noticeable change. And I think that you see, I think they're 6-0, 7-0 in one-run games. Like, the little things matter. Like, the little things are the big things. So it's appreciated that the Yankees are actually I know they're saying it now, but they never used to do it, that every game is important. Like, these games will count in the standings all the way through the end of the season. So it's good to see that, and I think it's a reason why they've gotten off to the start that they have.
I love it. I hope it continues. I hope this isn't just a one-off based on the way that their schedule pans out.
All right. I had one last question for you, and it's about the Jets. We're 2 weeks away. I'd like to get a little feel of the temperature. Jets with the 10th pick. Do they? I'll give you four options. You don't have to lock it in per se, but as of right now, skill position player, offensive lineman, trade down. I'll give you three options. Trade down. I won't give you a trade up because trade up means they're trading up for a skill position player, or a trade down to recoup a second round pick. Where would you feel like is the direction Joe Douglas, the great Joe Douglas, goes?
I want him to lock up the offensive lineman, but
I know that's what you want, but what do you think will actually happen?
And this could be a smokescreen, but it seems like they're going to go skill position and give Rodgers what he wants for the year, and that would probably mean Bowers.
Well, look, I've seen a lot of draft stuff where one of the it seems like the Adunze or Neighbors are the two picks for the Giants at 6, and it seems like there's, again, it's smoke seeds, and who knows what's true. It feels like there's at least the possibility whoever the Giants don't select at that pick is still available at the Jets pick at 10.
There's been a lot of connections, and again, this could be the same J.J. McCarthy to the Giants smokescreen with the Jets.
Right, sure.
But there seems like everything you read is, oh, it's going to be Jake Bowers at 10, from everybody, including the players.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, well, we got a couple of weeks until the draft. We only have a couple of seconds before the show is over. Thanks to Kyle Anthony for coming on to talk a little UFC 300. Thanks to Joe. Thanks to Julian. Thanks to the audience as well. We're back Monday night along with Larry Hardesty on the ESPN New York Tonight vehicle. Thanks to everybody, and we will see you then, only here on 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.